Civica owned and listener supported for over 50 years. This is 90.1 KPFT and FM HD1 Houston.
That is the percolating beat of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees. And that means it's 6 p.m. on a Wednesday, time for So What's Your Story. We're the only program in Houston devoted entirely to stories and the art of telling them right here on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston's community radio. Well, I'm your host today, Eric Keen, backed up by the most talented team on radio. And I'm really excited about today's show because we are featuring a very unique animal welfare organization called Friends for Life from right here in Houston. Now, I've been hanging around their animal shelter the last few weeks, and I can tell you, I have never met a bunch of people more dedicated to their cause than these folks at Friends for Life. So today we'll hear their stories from staff members, volunteers, and others affiliated with the organization. So grab your cats and dogs, gather around, and let's get right to our guests. Well, now we're going to hear from Melissa Taylor. Melissa is the behavioral and training manager at Friends for Life. And Melissa has logged more than 20 years in shelter animal behavior, starting out in New York City. Melissa, thanks for being our guest here on So What's Your Story?
Thanks so much for having me. It's an honor. I'm so excited.
Well, we're excited. Now, Melissa, there are several animal welfare groups out there, and I think they're all great. You know, SPCA, PETA, Humane Society. But what is it about Friends for Life that sets it apart from the others? What makes Friends for Life unique?
Well, there are two things that immediately come to mind about Friends for Life. And I have been in this business for quite a while now, so I am familiar with all these different kinds of organizations. And one thing that sticks out about Friends for Life is that we're always pushing the envelope and kind of going beyond the boundaries of what has been considered possible in animal welfare for decades.
Yeah.
So, for example, we have this Fraidy Cat program. It's one of our flagship programs at Friends for Life. And what that is taking cat who maybe never had any exposure to humans before, never been touched by a human. And we socialize them and we get them to assume that every human is a potential friend, which is huge because for decades, the people who are considered the biggest experts in the field on feral cats have said that it was impossible to do this. And folks, back when I first started over 20 years ago, were saying that you couldn't do this. And I just accepted it back then. When I came to Friends for Life, we're no longer accepting what was considered gospel in animal welfare. So
would you say you go the extra mile and you give animals extra chances that other people might not give them?
Sure. I mean, altogether, it's doing what folks thought would be impossible in an animal shelter.
Right.
So, for example, there's the story of Burrito. And Burrito was adopted from us, I don't know, several years ago, maybe 7 years ago, as a young adolescent dog. And he went out to live across the country, and he was abandoned at his home and picked up by the local animal control, and they scanned him for a microchip and come to find out he came from Friends for Life. How many shelters would send folks out there to go get the dog, find out the dog needed surgery and wasn't well, and would bring the dog back, spend thousands of dollars in surgery and rehabilitation? I mean, that goes beyond what would normally be considered doable in an animal shelter. We're not a big shelter. We're not a wealthy shelter. We just are just pushing the envelope and always asking about what's possible. You know, I came to Friends for Life, 11 or so years ago, and our executive director did not believe in behavior for sheltering. She thought that a behavior specialist for a shelter was kind of like having a professional masseuse in the shelter. She just didn't think it was really, really helpful or relevant. And I went to the shelter and worked on a dog, and she saw me. This was a dog who wouldn't have been considered adoptable because she was reactive to other dogs. And we were standing there in the lobby. This means that she would, you know, lunge and bark and growl and look pretty aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And she was around other dogs. Uh-huh. We're in the lobby and dogs are walking past and she's just hanging out. And she's not just being well behaved, but you can see she's truly relaxed and comfortable. And Celise just realized, I don't know. We'll have to talk to her about what happened in her mind, but something happened. And ever since then, she's been a believer. And now behavior is a huge part of the Friends for Life.
So you had a magical moment there that changed everything. Related to that, do people, I know I'm going to mess this word up,
anthropomorphize.
What is it?
Anthropomorphize.
Yeah. What you said. Do people do that too much? I mean, do they treat their animals as if they have human reasoning skills?
That's a good question. I don't know how much is the amount that people should anthropomorphize animals. Right. Sometimes I don't think they do it enough because as we grow to learn about animals, we realize that animals are a lot closer, that non-human animals, remember that humans are animals too. Right. Non-human animals are just so close to humans. They learn in a very similar way. So for example, if a dog is exposed to a stressor, there's some kind of stressful situation, they're going to look at our face to see how we respond, much the same way that a child is going to look at their parents' face to see how they could react. Well, dogs do the same thing. And dogs are able to understand when you're about to expose them to some kind of stressful situation, and they can let you know if it's okay if you do that, just like a human can. And the reason I say that I don't know if people anthropomorphize enough or is because some folks don't even think that cats can feel pain. But they, you know, they experience pain the very much the same way that we do.
Mm-hmm. They're kind of stoic about it, I think, but that doesn't mean they don't feel the pain.
Yes. Yes. They feel the pain and they feel emotions, the fearful emotions that are associated with pain the same way that humans do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know it would take years to go over all of the behavioral information about animals. But like, if you could just put in a nutshell what people should know about how to treat their animals in a few sentences, how would you put that?
Wow. I think that when their animals are doing behaviors that humans are not happy with, what I would do is investigate a little bit and try to figure out why, because there are no such things as bad animals. They're doing things for a reason. Either these are species appropriate behaviors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If your cat is scratching your couch, it's not a bad cat. This is a cat who is showing species appropriate behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just think about why they're doing it and give them an outlet for them to demonstrate that behavior appropriately. I think that would solve so many problems.
Got it.
In this world, in this animal welfare world.
Melissa, our program is all about stories. We're trying to keep alive the ancient art of storytelling. And since the beginning of time, it seems like human stories have been full of animals. But from Aesop's fables, Native American stories are full of animals. All the Walt Disney movies, Dr. Doolittle. Now, you're the animal expert. I'm going to put you on the spot here. What is it about animals that they inspire so many intriguing stories?
Wow. So, gosh, so many reasons. The first thing that comes to mind is that people are so attached to their animals. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know exactly what they're thinking. Some of us know a little bit more than others, but I think the run-of-the-mill human who doesn't work in behavior doesn't really know what animals are thinking, so they can assign whatever feelings and thoughts they want to. So
they project.
They can make the animals feeling similar to what they want them to feel. And so that gives them this feeling of, this dog is trying to protect me. This is a big, big one that we see. And that connection that humans have with animals, you know, whenever they see stories about animals, like, for example, what's that movie with the dogs and the cats, and they get lost and they're making a journey
homebound,
homeward bound.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You can assign whatever feelings you want to those animals. It's so much cuter when they're soft and cuddly and the mystery, right? We don't really know what animals are feeling. So it's easy for people to assign whatever they desire to emotions. It's so funny when you ask the story about why people are so interested, why are stories, including animals, so compelling? It reminds me of how whenever some animal comes to the shelter, even if you've been in the shelter business for over 20 years, you still got to make up some story about how the animal got there. Human stories, maybe, but animal stories, 100%. The animal comes to the door. Oh, what do you think happened? This one was abused. This one was a bait dog. You know, it's funny.
But I want to thank you for being our guest here today. Oh, and also before I let you go, can you tell our listeners where they can turn to find out more about Friends for Life?
Oh, sure. They can go to our website, which is friends4life.org. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if people even go to websites anymore. Do they still do that? Maybe they want to go to social media. We have Friends for Life Facebook page, and we have an Instagram. And they should just come on over to the shelter if they're in Houston. They can visit our dogs and cats and see what we do. It makes us different.
And there is a wealth of information down there at Friends for Life. You'd be amazed at what you'll find.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being our guest here, and you keep up the good work.
Thanks, Eric. It was such a pleasure to be on the show.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, our next guest today is Elise Zeman. Elise is a behavior coordinator at Friends for Life. That means she's a certified professional dog trainer and spends her time making sure the animals are healthy and happy and as ready for adoption as can be. So, Elise, it sounds like an incredibly challenging task to be educating everybody on dog training. So what are some of the most common mistakes you see people making with their dogs, and what should they do differently?
That is a great question. I will say people love dogs. They love cats. They love animals. And people are so good with them. And we can all always get better, right? Like, I've been a certified professional dog trainer for years, and I'm constantly learning things that, like, I get to change and do better with my dogs, you know? So
even you. Okay.
Everyone's in the same boat there. So I used to be a sixth grade math teacher, and then I went into, you know, instead of teaching sixth graders, I went into teaching dogs and cats, right? And something common that you see with school teachers, and you see with trainers, and you see with people who have kids at home and dogs at home and cats at home and bunnies at home. Mm-hmm. I think it's very human to really focus on, oh no, stop doing that. No, don't do that either. That's not right, right? It's so common to focus on the negative. And science shows, like, if you do experiments and track data and, like, find out what gives the best performance, it's not pointing out what people are doing wrong. It's pointing out what they're doing right. So you want a dog to sit in front of you, give it a treat. You know, don't just get mad at it when it doesn't sit or whatever, right? It takes a lot of practice, but, you know, I think it actually makes us, like, better human beings too.
Does it drive you crazy when you see people, like, walking their dog and jerking on it? You must just go berserk.
Eric, don't. Oh my God. I hate it so much. I hate going to dog parks. I hate going to, you know, I think it's very human to think that, oh my God, people can see me and my dog is supposed, it's not supposed to bark and it's not supposed to, I don't know, but it's very tough for me because it has a big effect on dogs when we're, you know, when we punish them. So yes, I really, really hate seeing it.
Right. So at least I bet you've got some interesting stories from your time with Friends for Life. I mean,
for sure.
You've been there, what, 7, 8 years?
8 years, yep. They just can't get rid of me.
And you've seen a lot of animals come and go. Any animal stories come to mind?
So many. I mean, how much time do we have? I can sit here and talk for like days about all the animals. I tell you what, I'm sitting here with Lulu on my lap. Lulu is my dog. She's like a pit bull mix that was tied up to the front door 6 years ago.
Wow.
And I think that we all get so angry when we see stuff like that. And I definitely do, right? Like, oh my God, how could people be so mean? How could they not care about their dog, right?
Right.
And we were actually able to track down the person who had dumped Lulu.
Oh.
And, you know, well, it turned out that they were going through some really, really terrible times.
Oh boy.
And they absolutely could not care for a dog anymore. There was incarceration going on. There was financial difficulties. There were, and they loved these dogs and they wanted them to be somewhere safe. So they didn't want to drop them off at a kill shelter. So they tied them up to a no kill.
Sure.
And you know, we just turned to them and we said, gosh, okay, well, that's not the process. And that's, you know, not how things work, but we're going to take care of this dog. Wow. Sometimes people just need help and they're just doing their best.
Yeah.
And,
well, that shows you gotta understand their story before we pass judgment. I guess
it's all about the stories, right?
The stories. Yeah. Elise, you mentioned that she's a pit bull, right? Or a pit bull cross, at least. Now, do pit bulls get kind of a bum rap? I mean, what's your take on pit bulls?
Pit bulls are the reason that I'm in sheltering.
Wow.
So I'm like, yeah, how many days do you have to talk about this?
We could absolutely turn it into a series, maybe.
Seriously. We've done, oh my God, I've done so much research. I've read books. I've watched college lectures. There is a lot behind, you know, I mean, we judge people based on the groups they're in and how they look. And we judge dogs based on groups they're in and how they look. Lulu is, so we have her DNA. That's why I know she is a pit bull chow mix, like two breeds that are deemed aggressive, right?
Yeah,
would automatically get declined from about 95% of apartments in Houston.
Sure.
She's perfect. She is our number one event dog. And because she walks up to people and just asks for pets immediately.
Oh.
I've had her for 6 years. I've never heard her growl. Oh my God. Of course, she's never like bit or snarked or snarled or anything at any dog or cat or human or anything, right? But because of how she looks and because of the people that we would associate her with, people would give her a bad rap. And science does not agree with it. Science shows in so many different ways and so many different studies that pit bulls are not more dangerous.
So is it the owners that are usually the issue rather than the dogs, maybe?
That's a great question. And it gets very complicated. It's definitely part of it. It's definitely part of it. Every once in a while, there does come a dog that's just genetically predispositioned, right? And then there comes, you know, okay, well, the owner was really, really awful to the dog or wanted it to be mean to strangers. So
it could happen to any dog, right?
Exactly. It can happen literally to a dachshund, or like the first breed actually that was banned in the United States was Pomeranians in the 1870s.
Pomeranians?
Yeah. It's wild. And we just keep changing our minds about like which dogs are dangerous. And right now it's pit bulls.
Well, we hope pit bulls, we can clear their reputation at least a little bit today.
It's getting better for sure.
Yeah. Now, Elise, beyond your work at Friends for Life, I understand you went through your own personal ordeal not long ago, and you have an inspiring story about that. Could you share that story with us?
Sure. on January 25th, earlier this year, I woke up, I let my dogs out, I got them breakfast, I got dressed for work, I told my fiance I loved him, and I left my house. I drove one block to the stoplight, the light turned green, I took a left, and a car T-boned me going 50 miles an hour. Right in the driver's side. Dude just ran his red light. I was life flighted over to Memorial Hermann downtown. I was in a coma for 2 weeks. I lived in that hospital for 5 weeks. I had a really, really bad brain injury. That was the reason I was in the hospital for so long was we had to rebuild my brain, literally. Even when I, you know, woke up from the coma, I wasn't forming memories. I wasn't speaking like I normally do. I wasn't able to eat on my own. I couldn't walk or stand up or.
Oh God.
This year was all about relearning how to do everything. So I was at the hospital, you know, I lived there for a while and I got to come home. Oh my God. We have a video of like my dogs at home when I first saw them when I got home from the hospital.
I could imagine.
I went to like outpatient, like an intensive therapy program with Tier. Oh my God. They're amazing. And we worked on, okay, well, this is how you walk. Okay, well, this is how you solve problems. Okay, this is...
You're really an inspiration, Elise. I mean, what you've been through there.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times when something awful happens to you, you really reflect on, oh my God, well, I'm going to change my life and I need to move to Hawaii and I need to become an artist. And all I wanted, even when I woke up in the hospital... I love my fiance. I love my family. I love my dogs. And all I wanted to do was go back to work at the shelter.
Oh, man.
I really, really believe in the work that we're doing. And oh, my God, Eric, the people I work with, they were at the hospital not even 2 hours after my accident. They came together, right? And they did what they had to do. I had people at my house twice a day just to like make sure my dogs were getting the training and enrichment and love that they needed, right? Because they knew that that's what I would want and that would make me feel better. You know, once I was through with inpatient therapy and through with outpatient therapy, and I was like, okay, I'm ready to come back to work. I was able to work 4 hours a week. That's all I can. And I, oh my God, I fought so hard to get 4 hours done. It was like,
wow. You know, so do you think the type of work you did there, did that sort of inspire your recovery some? Because I know you're so involved with it. You care so much.
Yes.
You put so much into it. Did that kind of motivate your recovery?
Absolutely. I mean, I really, really believe in the work that we do. I believe that every animal matters. I believe that we have figured out so much about how we can help animals, and other shelters and other groups all across the world are catching on to literally what we're doing here in Houston, Texas, right? So absolutely not. It was motivation, right? Like, hey, I have to figure out how to walk because I need to go walk the dogs.
Oh, wow. Right? So, Elise, before we let you go, where can people go for help in training their pets? Who can they turn to get help?
Oh, my gosh, Eric, that's a great question. Because, like, literally, Joe Schmo from down the block can throw up a website and call himself a dog trainer because, oh, my God, I've had dogs my whole life. But, like, there's literal science and, like, behavioral principles behind what we do. So if you're already having a problem with your dog, you should get real help, right? Instead of like fake help. We have a list on our website at friendsthenumber4life.org of trainers in the area that we recommend because they have independent third party organizations that like certify them. So they're certified professional dog trainers. So like they've actually like passed it does. And so you just want to make sure that they're actually using scientific evidence behind what they're doing, and that they're, it sounds funny, but that they're being nice to your dog, man. Mm-hmm. Like, science shows that you get better performance and a better animal when you just train them with kindness, you know. And if you're having a behavior problem and then you start shocking your dog, like, you can get a lot worse behavior problems. You get aggression, you can get anxiety, you can get, yeah, some really, really awful stuff. So,
right.
A lot of nice trainers that are certified. That's what you should look for.
Okay. And they're on your website, friendsforthenumber4life.org. Sorry.
Yep.
That'll be well put out there.
Yay.
Well, Elise, thank you for that story about your dogs, about you. You are incredible. And we're so glad you're doing what you're doing. And keep up the good work.
Eric, thank you so much. And you keep up the good work too, man. You're also doing a great job.
I'm trying to keep up with you guys. Thanks again.
Of course.
We're going to take a short break from our show for station identification and to make a few announcements. You're listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Huntsville. Our show is sponsored by the Houston Storytellers Guild. The Guild features story events and workshops throughout the year, and they hold monthly story swaps the fourth Tuesday of every month. To find out more about the Guild, just go to HoustonStorytellers.org. And while you're on that same website, visit our show's page. Just click on So What's Your Story, where you'll find archives from this program dating all the way back to the year 2008. And we're also on Facebook. Just go to the So What's Your Story page on Facebook to keep up with the latest happenings there. And don't forget our friends at the Moth Storytelling Organization. The Moth holds monthly story slams the second Tuesday of every month down at the Warehouse Live on Emanuel Street, and they'll be holding their big yearly grand slam on December 6th at 8 p.m. at the Heights Theater on 19th Street. So be sure to check that out. And now let's get back to our program. We are featuring this week stories from the Friends for Life Animal Welfare Organization. Well, our next guest today is Adrian Rich. Originally from Chattanooga, Tennessee, Adrian now lives in the Woodlands, Texas, with her husband and is about to begin esthetician school. Adrian, I know I mispronounced that.
It's all good. What? How are you doing?
What school?
Esthetician school.
Okay, what is that?
Kind of like a beauty school, facials and spa work and things like that.
Wow. Okay. Sounds good to me. Adrian, I understand that you have an interesting story about an animal I believe you got from Friends for Life. Tell
yes.
us about that experience.
I do. Yes. So we actually got our dog Effie. She is a Whippet Pitbull mix, and we got her in February of 2022. My husband and I were freshly married, and I grew up having family dog. We really desired that companionship. And we found Effie. We actually found her online. And we met Effie and we immediately fell in love with her. She's such an affectionate dog. And we got to the facility where she was and we kind of took her out into like these outdoor cages or fences or whatever where you're able to kind of see the dog outside of the kennel. And we get her out there and I go to grab a tennis ball and I turn my back. Our sweet little barely 40-pound girl has started to scale a 10-foot fence because she's trying to jump over and leave. The volunteers were like, yeah, you got to watch her. She's a little bit of a jumper. We were like, okay, sounds good. They were like, we think it's, you know, the Whippet nature in her. And we just wrote it off. And my husband and I look back and we joke and we're like, we should have known from day one what we were signing ourselves up for. Right. But we did. We made the commitment. We got her and we fell in love with her. We brought her home. Everything was totally normal until very first night. We're like, all right, we're going to bed. Very first night. And we're like, okay, Effie, like it's time to get in your bed. And she absolutely lost it. In a way, I have
never seen or heard a dog lose it. No, I mean, it was barking, it was howling, it was scratching at the bottom of this crate, and it was just like absolute meltdown, unlike anything I've ever seen. She could not be left in that kennel by herself at all. She was trying to chew her way out. We were worried she was going to injure herself. And so, like, very next day, we've had her for less than 24 hours. We're like, all right, let's see if we can call someone where we can get her into maybe like day boarding or something like that while we're at work, and we'll figure things out. We very quickly learned that she could not be left alone at all. Anytime my husband and I, you know, would try to leave, we could hear her, you know, howling at the top of her lungs in our house, panicking. We had a situation where the day boarding facility she was at, she ended up getting kicked out because she tried to eat her way out of the like run kennel that they had her in. She chewed through the metal. I got called from work from day one then that they were like, hey, you need to come pick her up. She has, you know, scraped
her. So she even got kicked out of the boarding school.
Yes, she got kicked out of the day boarding facility, cut like the tip of her nose to where they had like had to glue it back together. So we go through all this, we go to our vet and we're like, okay, what do we do? Like, what are our options here? Because my husband and I were very determined when we got her, when we get her, we keep her.
Right.
And so we went to our vet with that mentality of, we're not giving up on her. We were offered medication, but it was made very clear to us that medication was not going to help unless we had training alongside. And the problem is, everyone that was recommended to us by our vet was charging about $350 an hour per session. And our vet was very clear with us that, hey, this is going to be more than a 6-week situation. This is something that's, you know, she's really struggling. And just know that there was a lot of struggle that we went with trying different medications. She got kicked out of the day boarding. You know, I'm working, my husband's working. We're like, what are we going to do? We don't want to get rid of this dog. She chewed through her crate and ended up chewing our couch apart. And we ended up buying this like industrial, like steel crate that we knew it wasn't that we were wanting to enclose her, but it was, we have to keep her safe. And, you know, she had, you know, broken our blinds in our house from chewing through them, and she chewed the couch. So she wasn't in a place where she could be trusted to just be in our home either. So my husband works out of town in and out pretty often, and he had a promotion that was in Denver, Colorado. And we had decided that it was pretty important that I be there for him. So we call our vet and we asked her, could she be boarded here just for the weekend so that I can go?
Right.
I go. I'm in Denver. We get a phone call and it is, hey, she's trying to chew her way out of the kennels that we have. We've kept her on a leash and we've got her up at the front. She's not doing well in there. We just want to let you know. I'm like, okay, cool. And then the next morning, I get a phone call that says, you need to come get her. She cannot stay with us. And I was like, okay, can you tell me what happened?
Oh, boy.
She apparently had broken out of the runs. She had jumped over the kennel, which is about, you know, it's like 6-7 feet tall in the buildings. And she had managed to get herself into the front of the vet's office. And apparently she decided that she was going to do a day of work. And she, you know, got on the desk and knocked over the pens and the pencils. And she had a grand old time by herself up in the office. And the vet told me, we came in this morning and we thought someone had broken in because there were plants knocked over.
Yeah, Adrian, if this weren't true, it would almost be funny.
It's comical looking back because we know how far we've come.
Oh, man.
So we've got all of this. And at this point, it's a nightmare and trying to get her help. But the problem is we're aware training is the best option. Right. However, financially, we were not in a position where we could do that. So I'm able to catch a plane that evening. I fly back into Texas and I'm like, what do we do? So my husband and I had to have the really hard conversation of, is she simply too much for us? that made us feel very guilty because Effie had already been returned to the shelter twice.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Because with the exact phrase of she is too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was heartbreaking to us because we are sitting here saying she's barely over a year old. We're her third family. And we made the commitment of we're going to keep her. And so I call my vet again and I'm like, what are our options? And we were given pretty much three options: putting her back up for adoption. We were given the option of fostering, and finding training was the third. And then there was a fourth option that was not an option for us, which was euthanasia.
Right.
We refused to euthanize this girl. And that is when our vet started giving names, and she actually recommended Friends for Life for us for fostering.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent an email and I just explained everything I just explained to you. And we need help. The lady who was emailing with me, I believe her name was Pam, she emailed me and she said, if you are wanting to keep your dog, we do offer behavioral training on site. We have volunteers who are educated in the matter and they can help you. And our services are free. So I get a phone call from a very good friend of mine at Friends for Life now, from Melissa Taylor. She calls me and she goes so far into detail. And I remember after that phone call coming home and talking to my husband and being like, I don't know if I believe this. I don't know if I believe this is possible, because she made it sound like it was almost magic or something. And financially, it is something that we can do because it is free. And we meet Melissa, and immediately, as soon as we got there, she absolutely fell in love with Melissa. And Melissa was so good about sitting down on the floor and approaching her in a way where she felt safe and comfortable. And it was just such, I'm an animal lover myself. I have seen people who love animals, but I have never seen someone like that and in that realm be so good at what they do. Day one, she looked at me and she looked at my husband and she was like, we are going to get through this.
Wow.
I didn't believe her, truthfully. Wow. I did not, because we have gone through so much in the previous 90 days that I thought there's no way this is possible.
So how long before you started seeing results with Effie on this?
It was around probably the 3-4 week mark that we were honestly like, huh, we've now built our way up to going to the back door, opening and closing it and coming back, and she's having no reaction at all. But those short little segments really helped. So anytime my husband and I went to do anything, we had a dog sitter or one of us stayed home, and we found a way to make it work, because we were like, if we're going to do this, we're going fully in. And we did. And it's a slow process, don't get me wrong, but it works. And we're proof that it works. We went from having a dog who could not be left alone at all, who got kicked out of boarding, who got kicked out of the vet's office,
wow,
who was pretty much recommended, you need to put this dog down. I remember the first time my husband and I went to the grocery store together after getting her. And I called Melissa and I was like, guess what we just did? We went to Trader Joe's and we were able to go because Effie was able to stay at home.
Well, it sounds like we're talking about two different dogs here.
Yes, we definitely are. And it is something that without Friends for Life, without their help, we would not have her. And that is just the truth.
Wow.
It's honest. And I cannot imagine our lives without her, because she is such a loving, kind dog. She is, in every other aspect, she is so well behaved. But without that help that we were given, without the resources, not only physical, but knowledge and everything else that we got from Friends for Life, we would not have her. And that is just the end of it, truthfully. That is the most important thing that I can say, is that without them, we would not be where we are. And honestly, she probably would have been put down. I will forever and ever and ever sing the praises of Friends for Life. And I know They have helped so many other people, and they are so caring. And I will never, ever be able to financially, physically, emotionally repay them ever.
Well, yeah, that's quite a testament to Friends for Life. But I
yes.
also got to say, I admire you and your husband for your commitment to Effie and you not
Thank
giving
you.
Up on.
Thank you.
Kind of makes me sad when I think about all the probably millions of dogs in that situation yeah. where nobody would stick
yeah.
with them.
Yeah. And I mean, going, you know, talking to our family and friends and, you know, all of them were like, you kept her longer than we would have.
Well, that's truly an inspirational story, Adrian. I love happy endings like that.
Thank you. Yes.
So it's, how's Effie
it's
now?
Definitely.
Effie's doing good right now?
Oh my gosh, yes. She is such a good girl. We have actually gone on a couple of vacations, which has been wonderful. We've been able to leave her with family and friends, and she's just such a snuggle bug, and she loves us and we love her. And so she's as happy as can be.
That's what we like to hear. Well, Adrian, I'd like to thank you for that story. Just the kind of thing I needed to hear today.
Thank you. Yes, I very much always enjoy telling that story. It is definitely, it's a roller coaster ride, but it's a good one. So, yes.
And best of luck to you and to Effie.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you.
Well, our next guest today is Lexi Blake. Lexi's a native Houstonian and has worked at Friends for Life since 2021. She's married with a 4-year-old boy, a dog, and 3 cats. Hey, Lexi, thanks for being our guest on So What's
Thank
Your
you.
Story.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
So you're a cat lover. You're in the right business, I'd say.
I think so, yeah. As I sit next to my office cat, George, who's keeping me company during this
I've
interview.
I met George. He hissed at me a little bit, but but we're good buddies. Lexi, what is your role here at Friends for Life?
So I am the managing director.
Mm-hmm. And you were, could you tell us a little bit about the volunteer? Weren't you at one time the volunteer coordinator?
Yes. So managing director is a newer role of mine as of maybe almost 2 months ago. Prior to that, for 2 years, I was the volunteer manager of Friends for Life. We have about 400 active volunteers right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we rely heavily on them and we love the help that they give us. They're a big part of why we can do what we do. So definitely love that role, and I'm excited for what's to come in this new role.
Well, from your work there, Lexi, I'm sure that you've got a few stories to tell. Let's hear a story or two.
Okay. So prior to my taking on the volunteer manager role, I actually started as an animal care specialist. And while I was in that role, probably maybe a month in, I was walking one of our shelter dogs around the block. And I got to the street that has the park across the street from it. And I always walk the dogs on the other side of the street of the park, because a lot of times there's a lot of dogs at the park with their owners. And I'm glad I did that this time, because as I'm walking, I notice in my peripherals, this dog who looks to be in distress in the corner of one of the front yards of the houses there across the street from the park. Huh. And at first I'm startled, right? Because I didn't see her and I'm handling a dog. So I'm concerned about, you know, making sure that the dog I'm walking stays safe. But I notice that she doesn't get up or move or budge whatsoever. And she's panting. And then I noticed that there was a little Tupperware container of water next to her. Mm-hmm. So that led me to believe, she maybe has been here for a little bit and someone's trying to help her. But wow. I noticed she's just not moving. She's not moving at all. And she's panting. So I walk back quickly to the shelter and I find PC, who's our behavior coordinator. And I tell them, hey, there's this dog, this cute little pocket pity dog that I think is in distress. And what should we do? And I mean, within minutes, there was a whole crew going out to figure out what's going on with this dog. And that was a defining moment for me where I realized, you know, wow, this place is really special. And we really do whatever we can. If we see an animal that needs help, we're going to do whatever is within our power to get that animal the help they need.
Right.
And so we brought her back to the shelter. We named her Peggy. She is still my screensaver and my icon on my email address signature. I just fell in love with her. Everyone who met her fell in love with her because she's the sweetest dog, but she was in really bad shape.
Wow.
So we ended up figuring out that she had pyometra, which is a potentially life-threatening infection of the uterus. And she was also heartworm positive. So we do what we do, as we do here, nurse her back to health. And we put her in a good foster home. And she had her surgeries. And the community helped support us with that. And we fundraised for her surgeries because they're not cheap. And lo and behold, the foster ended up adopting her.
Great.
Yeah. And so she had a really good story. And she was a really special dog. And again, what was more special is just that realization, you know, of like, we really do band together to do whatever we can do to help make animal lives better.
Yeah. I've been noticing Friends for Life, they really go the extra mile for these animals. Whereas some people might give up on them, you guys just don't give up.
We don't. We're pretty stubborn that way, in a good way.
A good way. A good stubborn, yes.
Yeah, and I think that's what's cool is, I mean, we're always asking the question, what if we, so that we can foster the possibility of improving the current systems that are in place. We're in a lot of sheltering models right now. We're always looking to improve, and we're looking for the next radical idea in sheltering, and it's really special here. I'll say that much.
Right. So what's the future look like for Friends for Life? Any expansion projects, anything going on?
Yeah. So we own the lot next door to our shelter, and we plan to build a wellness clinic in that empty lot.
Well, that is exciting.
Yeah. It's been a dream for a while, and just seeing that empty lot is really exciting because it means it's that much closer, being able to take action on that. So that's a big project.
Now, did you start off on 19th Street, just some little shop there, and you've expanded and still growing? That's pretty
still
exciting.
Still growing, yeah, with the number of animals that we're saving, the number of employees that we're hiring. There's always more to do, to learn, to grow, and that's a good problem to have, growing pains, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Our animals are set. They've got a good life. And
gotta tell our listeners, Lexi, if you walk into the shelter there, you know it's a shelter. Even going to people's offices, there's cats running around. There was a couple of ferrets in there, I remember.
Sometimes bunnies, rats. Yeah.
You guys practice what you preach. I mean, these animals are all over you and you're working right alongside them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a work perk, in my opinion. Like the fact that George is just napping on her heating pad next to me and I have a little office buddy is probably one of the greatest work perks, next to being able to wear yoga pants to work.
Yes. For a cat lover, you got it made, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Lexi, I want you to know that I appreciate you being our guest here today. And thank you for all you do for the animals in Houston.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for being a wonderful part of the shelter. And we're really glad you're a part of the team.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, my next guests today are Lisa Everett and Lucy Rodriguez. Lisa is a native Houstonian and a legal aid attorney. And Lucy, also a native Houstonian, is a project communications lead. And Lucy and Lisa, today we are dedicating our program to an animal organization called Friends for Life that you are very well familiar with. And I understand you two have a story for us about an experience you had with them concerning a dog named Gus. Can we hear that story?
Sure, Eric. This is Lisa. In 2021, our dog passed. After mourning her for a while, we decided that we were ready to adopt another dog. Neither one of us wanted to buy a dog, something I'm adamantly against.
Yes.
And we have two cats, and so we were looking for a dog, an adult dog. We didn't want a puppy. We're both work full-time and weren't sure that we had the bandwidth to train a puppy. They're a lot of work. And so we decided to look at Friends for Life. Friends for Life has a filter where you can filter, like, gets along with, you know, kids, cats, or dogs. And so we filtered for cats. And Gus was the only dog that came up in the list that for sure got along with cats. So we filled out the application form and started the application process with Friends for Life.
Mm-hmm. But you have to know that his picture, he has a little bow tie and a big smile on there. So he was just instantly, like, handsome. And that really was kind of telling of his personality because he had a big smile.
So was it love at first sight?
Lucy loves all animals at first sight. No, so Friends for Life has an application process that requires you to provide information about yourself and how you interact with animals.
Right.
You're required to do a phone interview with some follow-up questions to make sure that the homes that the animals go to are suitable. And then for meeting Gus, we met him for the first time at a park.
On your birthday.
It happened to be my birthday. Uh-huh. But with two long-term Friends for Lifers, Pam and Melissa. And because Gus is known for being a special dog, we did not know it at the time, what they meant by special. And we've learned since he's come to live with us. But Gus is also, at the time, was the longest
stay
at the shelter. He had been there about 8 years.
8 years at the shelter.
Yes.
He apparently was dropped off at Friends for Life as a puppy, and he had parvo.
And I think distemper. I think he had like double.
Wow.
Yes. Friends for Life nursed him through it, and Gus stayed with fosters, but Gus had a hard time finding an adopter. I don't know why to this day, because to me, he's a total sweetheart. Mm-hmm. But he is special. We were advised that he likely had brain damage from the parvo.
Oh,
and so traditional dog training techniques don't always work with Gus because he is special.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, but we went through the adoption process. We met him at the park. They brought him over to the house 2 times to make sure that the house was suitable and whatnot. And then he came over for a weekend overnight, and we asked if he could just stay. And it was his birthday, and we signed the final adoption paper. So that's how he came to live with us.
Yeah, he never left when he came to sleep over.
Yes. Uh-huh. He absolutely gets along with the cats. And by gets along, I mean, he's a little bit afraid/deferential. And that's a little bit funny because our cats are just regular domestic short hair, you know, small cats.
Sure.
And Gus is 70-pound boxer pit mix. And I've seen him. Seen a cat sitting in the hallway, and he'll walk up to the cat, not want to pass the cat, turn around and walk the other way. Oh, I wanted to go to the sofa. And I've seen him hesitate to go through a door when a cat is there. I've seen the cats take his food or his treats.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's been an absolute dream as far as that's concerned.
Yeah. Now, you said you found out he'd been 8 years at the shelter, like nobody took him for 8 years. Did that send up any warning signals?
He was actually, they had him in the office, and they let him out in the office with the other cats. So when I heard that, it was like, oh, he's like the shelter dog.
Oh, kind of a mascot.
So our previous dog was special. So we have, I guess, dealt or lived with special animals, I would say.
I'm going to say we have a tolerance for dogs that don't get along with everyone.
Right.
But, and I did wonder what was wrong with him. And I know he went on a sleepover once, and they said that he spent the entire night barking at a fireplace.
Barking at a fireplace.
When I say Gus is quirky, if we leave,
gets fixated.
If we leave our shoes in the middle of the room where they don't go, he will come over and bark at the shoes until the shoes are moved.
I think Melissa said they call it like a dogtism. That maybe he has like autism for dogs.
Oh, okay. Dogtism.
So like he's very rigid about his schedule and what needs to go where.
Must be never a dull moment over there.
Except that he's a total lazy. Well, he's not a bore, but he doesn't greet us when we come home.
Uh-huh. He does.
Barely.
He just comes up, looks at you, and just sniffs you, and then walks back. But I mean, the other thing about adopting Gus was that, you know, Friends for Life was like, we want you to stay in touch with us. We're here to help. So we work with Friends for Life, and we actually are volunteers. Both of us volunteer to kind of learn behavior techniques. And I think that's helped us with Gus. And it's also, I think, very important that we stay in touch with Friends for Life and they stay in touch with us, because it's like a support system.
Mm-hmm. Gus is also, how many pills does Gus take a day?
Oh, Gus takes like 12 pills a day, like wow. 6 in the morning and 6 in the evening.
And it has to be spaced out. It does affect our, like, we plan our evenings around giving Gus his pills.
So it sounds like Friends for Life, they didn't just give this dog over to you and leave you on your own. They supported you every step of the way.
Yes, it was definitely
still doing so.
And the one thing is, everybody can see Gus. He's actually, I call him the mascot. If you look on Friends for Life truck, he's on the side of the truck.
He's famous.
I call him the mascot. But yeah, you can see Gus on the side of the Friends for Life van.
So that's great to hear that. And Gus, and right now, how's Gus doing?
Gus is doing well. Gus is sleeping on the sofa in the back room right now. We were told that Gus is actually more like a cat and he just wants to like watch TV with you, which he likes to lay down, but he doesn't like TV because if anyone screams or makes a loud noise, it upsets him and he leaves the room. He's sensitive.
That's all right. It sounds like he's entitled to a little sensitivity.
I would say so.
I think Friends for Life, at first, it's like overwhelming because it felt like, do they really want us to have this dog? I felt, you know, but it's like, if you work the process, you, and if you volunteer, you understand why they really, really care for the animals.
There's a reason for their madness.
Right.
And I'd also like to commend you two for having the patience with Gus and sticking with him and giving him this happy life.
Thank you.
Well, that's our show for today, folks. I'd like to thank our guests from the Friends for Life organization for their participation in the show. They were Melissa Taylor, Elise Seaman, Lexi Blake, Adrian Rich, Lisa Everett, and Lucy Rodriguez. And don't you dare move, because Michael Woodson is up next with Living Art. Make KPFT 90.1 FM a part of your everyday life. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. And we're going to close out the show with a song my grandkids picked for this particular episode in honor of Friends for Life. It's called Talk to the Animals. This is Eric Keene, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we want you to always remember that it's never too late to live happily ever after.
If I could talk to the animals, just imagine it, chatting with a chimp and chimpanzee. Imagine talking to a tiger, chatting with a cheetah. What a neat achievement it would be if we could talk to the animals, learn all their languages, maybe take an animal degree. I'd study elephant and eagle, buffalo and beagle, alligator, guinea pig, and flea. I would converse.
Hi, this is the Blues Hound.
And I'm Colleen.
Please join us on Sundays between the hours of 2 and 5 p.m. for Hound the Blues, where you'll hear us spinning the best new blues releases we can get our hands on. Whether it's the newest contemporary artist or simply old school cool, we'll bring the blues to you in all of its many flavors, commercial free and with as little talk as possible.
Thanks for inviting us into your homes each week and giving us the privilege to serve as your link to the blues world and our local blues community.
That's Hound the Blues, Sundays from 2 to 5 p.m. right here on 90.1 FM KPFT. Houston's Community Station.
Tennessee whiskey. Tennessee whiskey, yeah. KPFT Artist Profile, Shelley King.
Well, KPFT embraced my album and played it regularly, and that really gave me a big boost up getting started, getting my name out there. Over the years, I've done some benefits and stuff, and it just feels like a family.
Listen for her music and other local artists right here on KPFT. KPFT Programmer Profile.
Hey, this is Steve Gallington of the People's News. What we do is we focus on local news and international news that is of interest to the community. And we're always looking for that next story. If you have a story, bring it to us and let us know, because this is your program. The People's News belongs to the people, and we want to hear from you. And you're listening to KPFT Houston.
Listen for the People's News Sundays at noon, Monday and Thursday.